Okay, Tim, alcoholic.
Hi, Tim.
We're going to continue on with Bill's story. We're at the bottom of page 8. Bottom of page 8. Last week we saw that Bill had already been to Towns Hospital 3 times. He was the first time in the fall of 33, the second time July 34, third time September 34, and now we're at the very bottom of the page, page 8. My musing was interrupted by the telephone. The cheery voice of an old school friend asked if he might come over. So our little background story here is what we're talking about is Ebby Thatcher. And this is Bill's old school friend. And in actuality, he only went to school with Bill 1 year, ninth grade. And that's because Ebby was actually from Albany. That's Ebby on your right. This is a younger picture of him. And that one was from 1955 at the convention, him and Bill. So he only was a school chum of Bill's for 1 year, ninth grade. Ebby actually lived in Albany. That's where the family was from. And Bill was from East Dorset, Vermont, but went to Manchester, Vermont for high school to Burr and Burton Seminary. In more modern times, it's called Burr and Burton Academy. This is the picture in front of the school, still there, very upscale sort of high school. Not my type of high school, but, you know, this was someplace that people with a few dollars went to. And the reason Ebby went there was because Ebby was having trouble in Albany. And the family said, let's get him the heck out of here and let's get him over to Burr and Burton and maybe they'll straighten him out. But he only did 1 year there. However, Bill knew Ebby already because Ebby was a summer guy, right? His family came up to Manchester every year. Bill lived in East Dorset, 6 miles away, but he lived there all the time. But during the summer, these are the guys that he would hang around with in Manchester. In actuality, Bill's best friend was Lois's brother, Rogers. That was Bill's best friend. Okay, so that just gives us a little background story there. And our next line is, he was sober. It was years since I could remember his coming to New York in that condition. I was amazed. Rumor had it that he had been committed for alcoholic insanity. I wondered how he had escaped. So again, a little background story to this is Ebby in his absolute bottom. He's living in the family summer house. It's all closed up. And he's living in one room in this house in the winter. And he's at his absolute bottom. And the rule in the law in Vermont at the time is if you get convicted of 3 alcohol-related offenses, you are automatically sent for a 6-month commitment to an asylum. And it's once you're in, it's tough to come out. You know what I mean? So you did not want this to happen. And we're going to see what transpired. Of course he would have dinner. And then I could drink openly with him. What does that mean? Bill is hiding his drinking. Now he can drink openly when Ebby comes by. Unmindful of his welfare. What's that? Self-centeredness. Doesn't care about how it affects him. He's sober, but I'm going to drink anyway. I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. There was that time we had chartered an airplane to complete a jag, meaning a drunk, right? So that little story is Bill is in Albany with Ebby, and they're drinking all night, and there's an airfield that just opened up in Manchester 6 months prior, and only a few flights have come in there. And in fact, here's a photo I took of it. It's even less clear than some of the others. I believe it. I took this with a BlackBerry, but so this is a phone photo. But you can come up later on and see it. It's a grass airfield, so it's small little private planes, still in existence now, not used much at all. But so they're in Albany, they're drinking all night, and they get the bright idea: let's fly to Manchester. So who are they drinking with? They're drinking with a pilot, Ted Burke. And they convinced this guy in the morning, the three of us were going to fly to Manchester. So they radio ahead and say that they're going to be, you know, they're going to be landing in Manchester. And one of the town socialites, Mrs. Orvis, as in Orvis fly fishing, right, says, wow, we've got a flight coming in here. Let's get the high school band down there. Let's make a big deal about this thing, right? This is important. We're going to generate revenue. We're going to, you know, people are going to be flying in. We're going to be big. So they get the band. They're all out there. The three of them come off the plane, and they're all shot, you know, like just complete embarrassment. And in fact, Bill has to write her a letter, you know, a couple of days later after he got over the hangover, but he wrote an apology letter to Mrs. Orvis. So he's referring back to those great times, you know. His coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. The very thing, an oasis. Drinkers are like that. The door opened and he stood there, fresh skinned and glowing. There was something about his eyes. He was inexplicably different. What had happened? I pushed a drink across the table. He refused it. Disappointed but curious, I wondered what had gotten into the fellow. He wasn't himself. What was Bill drinking?
Gin.
Right. And we can go one step further and with pineapple juice. Gin and pineapple juice. That was the drink he pushed forward. Come, what's all this about? I queried. He looked straight at me, simply but smiling. He said, I've got religion. I was aghast. So that was it. Last summer, an alcoholic crackpot. Now I suspected a little cracked about religion. He had that starry-eyed look. Yes, the old boy was on fire, all right. But bless his heart, let him rant. Besides, my gin would last longer than his preaching. So he's visiting Bill in 182 Clinton in Brooklyn Heights. As it's alluded to, he has not seen Bill for a while. And when he shows up there, he actually is living in Manhattan. And where is he living? Where is Ebby living in Manhattan? At the Oxford Mission, right? He's living at the Oxford Mission. It's over on the east side on 23rd Street, right by the water, block off the water. And it's a direct relationship. It's an Oxford Group creation. So there's the Oxford Group, which meets at Calvary Church, and Oxford House. So it's the sanctuary is the main church, 21st Street and Park Avenue South. And then around the corner is a very large door, and that's Calvary House. And that's where all of the Oxford Group members would meet. Calvary Mission was where people that were homeless could testify on a daily basis for a bed that night. They would do a whole missionary little process which would earn you a bed for the night. Ebby lived there as a member of the Brotherhood, sort of a supervisor of this thing, and I believe there were 12 of them, and I think there were 30-something beds. So men came in homeless, almost all alcoholic, I'm guessing that. Many were alcoholics, and they would earn a bed for the night, and these supervisors, the Brotherhood, would take care of the place and would have a bed themselves then too, but a permanent bed, right? So Ebby's gotten sober through the Oxford Group, which we're going to talk about in a second. He's living there. He's learned through the Oxford Group, and we're going to see the five C's in a little while. You can take a copy when you leave. He's learned that the only way you keep this thing is to pass it on. So he's going to Bill to pass it on. Watch what happens. But he did no ranting. In a matter-of-fact way, he told how two men had appeared in court, persuading the judge to suspend his commitment. So this gets us back to the statement up front on the top of the page about did he escape? I thought he was locked up, thought he was committed due to alcoholic insanity. Well, what had happened to him was that there were two guys hanging around with each other, and that was Seber Graves and Shep Cornell. The two of them were hanging around with each other, and another character who was living up there was Roland Hazard. Roland Hazard lived about 15 miles south of Manchester, and Seabra and Shep were staying in Manchester. It's their vacation. They're just hanging around, right? But the three of them know each other from the Oxford group. And both Sebra and Shep go and see Ebi. They hear that this is going to happen, that he could potentially be locked up for alcoholic insanity. And they want to go to him and help him. And basically, Ebi's not really having much to do with it. It's not really resonating for him. And both Shep and Sebra go to Roland and propose to him that when Ebi has to go before the judge, that Roland comes. Roland's an older man, more established, a big Rhode Island family, a wealthy Rhode Island family, and thought that that would have a lot of credence. And as luck would have it, if we're talking about luck, who's the judge in the case? Sebra Graves' father, Judge Graves. So Roland and Sebra show up at the trial and convince the judge to turn Ebi over to Roland's care. So that's how he avoids getting sent to the asylum. So as soon as he gets Ebi in his care, Ebi is struck sober, like that. Meteoric, right? Within 2 weeks, Roland has him speaking in the area at various YMCAs and get-togethers and on fire, just like this guy is pink cloud stuff, right? So, but then it's decided he can't stay there forever. What are we going to do with this guy? And it's suggested, well, let's send him down to New York to work with the Oxford group in their New York stronghold, which is Calvary Church, run by Reverend Shoemaker, right? Sam Shoemaker. So they get him down there, and Shep, who wasn't at court, offers to let him live in his apartment for 2 weeks. Shep's a stockbroker on Wall Street. And lives there for 2 weeks, ends up at the mission, and now has a place to stay. And bottom line is that Ebi then gets the opportunity to go to Bill's house and to see if he can pass this on to him. So a picture of Sebra Graves. This is Judge Graves' son. And we have a picture of Shep Cornell. Right, this is the stockbroker that Ebi lived with in his house for 2 weeks. And then we have a picture of Roland Hazard, your left. This is a World War II era picture. But that's Roland Hazard. They had told of a simple religious idea and a practical program of action. So the simple religious idea is to surrender yourself to a higher power. And the practical program of action, and again, Oxford Group does not have steps. What do they have? They have tenets. There's at least 28 of them. Bill writes about five that he could accept. Here are the five that he could accept, which then this morphs into six steps and then morphs into 12 steps. Right? So a simple religious idea, surrender to a higher power, and a practical program of action. What is Ebi doing? Ebi is practicing one of the C's in bringing this to Bill at the moment, right? That was 2 months ago, and the result was self-evident. It worked. So in 2 months, he's done all of his step work, right? He's spoken at various places, and he's on his first 12-step call. He had come to pass his experience along to me. If I cared to have it. I was shocked, but interested. Certainly I was interested. This is key. I had to be, for I was hopeless. This is the setup for step one. Right? This is the setup for Bill's taking step one. He talked for hours. Childhood memories rose before me. I could almost hear the sound of the preacher's voice as I sat on still Sundays, way over there on the hillside. What hillside is he talking about? Anybody been up to Vermont to Bill's boyhood home? What's the mountain straight across? Mount Aeolus. This is the hillside he's talking about, right? There was that proffered temperance pledge I never signed. Proffered means to put before someone for acceptance. There was that proffered temperance pledge I never signed. My grandfather's good-natured contempt of some church folk and their doings. His insistence that the spheres really had their music, but his denial of the preacher's right to tell him how he must listen. His fearlessness as he spoke of these things just before he died. These recollections welled up in from the past. They made me swallow hard. The wartime day in old Winchester Cathedral came back again. Often when people talk about the spiritual experience Bill had, they think they're talking about when he's reading the doggerel on the tombstone. No, it's from being inside the cathedral. I had always believed in a power greater than myself. I had often pondered these things. I was not an atheist. Few people really are. For that means blind faith in the strange proposition that this universe originated in a cipher and aimlessly rushes nowhere. My intellectual heroes, the chemists, the astronomers, even the evolutionists, suggested vast laws and forces at work. Despite contrary indications, I had little doubt that a mighty purpose and rhythm underlay all. How could there be so much of precise and immutable law and no intelligence? I simply had to believe in a spirit of the universe who knew neither time nor limitation. But that was as far as I had gone. What is Bill going to lead us to now? The differentiation between a spirit of the universe and a personal God. Watch it. With ministers and the world's religions, I parted right there. When they talked of a God personal to me, who was love, superhuman strength, and direction, I became irritated and my mind snapped shut against such a theory. To Christ, I conceded the certainty of a great man, not too closely followed by those who claimed him. His moral teaching, most excellent. For myself, I had adopted those parts which seemed convenient and not too difficult. The rest, I disregarded. The wars which had been fought, the burnings and the chicanery that religious dispute had facilitated, made me sick. I honestly doubted whether, on balance, the religions of mankind had done any good. Judging from what I had seen in Europe and since, the power of God in human affairs was negligible. The brotherhood of man a grim jest. If there was a devil, he seemed the boss universal, meaning dominant, right? And he certainly had me. But my friend sat before me and he made the point blank declaration that God had done for him what he could not do for himself. His human will had failed, self-will. Doctors had pronounced him incurable, meaning hopeless. Society was about to lock him up. Like myself, he had admitted complete defeat. That's a description of Bill's taking step one and Ebby's. Admitting complete defeat. I am powerless over alcohol. Then he had, in effect, been raised from the dead, suddenly taken from the scrap heap to a level of life better than the best he had ever known. So he's had a psychic change. Had this power originated in him? Obviously, it had not. There had been no more power in him than there was in me at that moment, and this was none at all. That floored me. It began to look as though religious people were right after all. Here was something at work in a human heart which had done the impossible. My ideas about miracles were drastically revised right then. Never mind the musty past. Here sat a miracle directly across the table. He shouted great tidings. So what does he mean? He sees the proof. I saw that my friend was much more than inwardly reorganized. He was on a different footing. His roots grasped a new soil. sounds like a spiritual experience, spiritual awakening to me. Despite the living example of my friend, there remained in me the vestiges of my old prejudice. The word God still aroused a certain antipathy. When the thought was expressed that there might be a God personal to me, this feeling was intensified. I didn't like the idea. I could go for such conceptions as creative intelligence, universal mind, or spirit of nature, but I resisted the thought of a czar of the heavens, however loving his sway might be. Did you see the difference? He was describing power, energy, spirit, there was no manifestation of it. Creative intelligence, universal mind, spirit of nature. But then he gave it form by calling it, now changing to personal God, he gave it form, czar of the heavens. You can almost image it then. Do you see what he just did with those words? I have since talked with scores of men. A score is 20, so it's plural. I have since talked with scores of men who felt the same way. My friend suggested what then seemed a novel idea. He said, "Why don't you choose your own conception of God?" That statement hit me hard. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow I had lived and shivered many years. I stood in the sunlight at last. All right, get ready. Here's step two. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. I saw that growth could start from that point, upon a foundation of complete willingness. I might build what I saw in my friend. Would I have it? Of course I would. Just took step two. Thus, I was convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough. That's him now switching from the spirit of the universe to a personal God. There's the switch right there. Thus was I convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough. He will intercede if you ask. May not be the answer you want. He will intercede. At long last, I saw, I felt, I believed. Scales of pride and prejudice fell from my eyes. A new world came into view. The real significance of my experience in the cathedral burst upon me. For a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. There had been a humble willingness to have him with me, and he came. But soon, the sense of his presence had been blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly those within myself, and so it had been ever since. How blind had I been? So in other words, he recognizes during World War I, while he's being shipped out of England to go over to France, that he has fear, and he humbly asks God to come to him. And recognizes now, years later, 1939, right? Years later, that in 1917, God came to him because he needed him, wanted and needed him, and humbly accepted it. He's just coming to that realization at that point. So we all saw in the very beginning as I started that Bill was there in Towns Hospital three times. He has this information. Of course.
You said 1939. Can you explain that again?
The fact that he's writing this in 1939.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no problem. So, we know that he's gone three times, and he's got all this information now. Can he stop drinking on his own? No. Why? At the hospital, I was separated from alcohol for the last time. That's his fourth visit back to Towns. That's December 34. Fourth visit to Towns Hospital. Treatment seemed wise, for I showed signs of delirium tremens. Let's see step three. There I humbly offered myself to God as I then understood him, to do with me as he would. I placed myself unreservedly under his care and direction. I admitted for the first time that of myself I was nothing, that without him I was lost. Step three. Here's step four. I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to have my newfound friend, capital F, take them away, root and branch. So technically that's steps six and seven, right? Steps six and seven there. I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to have my newfound higher power take them away, root and branch. Did I read this? I have not had a drink since. Here's step five. My schoolmate visited me, and I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. Here's step eight. We made a list of people I had hurt or toward whom I felt resentment. I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals, admitting my wrong. That was step eight. Never was I to be critical of them. Here's step nine. I was to right all such matters to the utmost of my ability. Here's step 10. I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. Step 11, meditation. I was to sit quietly when in doubt. Step 11, prayer. Asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. Never was I to pray for myself, except as my request bore on my usefulness to others. Then only might I expect to receive, but that would be in great measure. My friend, now meaning Ebby, it's a small f, right? My friend promised, when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator, that I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems, plural, not just booze. It will solve everything. If you lose your job, should you pray for a new job? Pray for the fear of not having your job to go away, and it can be instantaneous. If you pray for the job, it may be in God's plan for you to get it in 6 months. Why be in pain 6 months? Pray for the fear to be removed now so that you are unblocked to be of maximum service to another alcoholic. Belief in the power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things, were the essential requirements. Simple, but not easy. A price had to be paid. It meant the destruction of self-centeredness. This is an altruistic movement. This is a program of giving oneself to someone else. It's a program of service. And in fact, when we practice these principles in all our affairs, that is secondary to bringing this message to another alcoholic. Primary. That's the way you stay sober. Bring the message to another alcoholic. And take a service commitment at your group. Right? But that service commitment at the group level doesn't trump bringing it to another alcoholic or working with another alcoholic, right? It's in order on purpose. I must turn in all things to the Father of Light. See again how he put imagery there? It's Father of Light rather than Spirit of the Universe, personal God. You can almost see Father of the Light, where you're Spirit of the Universe, it's misty, right? He's giving it form. These were revolutionary and drastic proposals, but the moment I fully accepted them, The effect was electric. And so what we'll see here is this is the description of Bill's white light experience. This is the abridged version, the full version, and pass it on. Much more detailed version of it. There was a sense of victory followed by such a peace and serenity as I had never known. There was utter confidence. I felt lifted up as though the great clean wind of a mountaintop blew through and through. God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on me was sudden and profound. For a moment, I was alarmed, and I called my friend the doctor. Who's the doctor? Silkworth. To ask if I were still sane. He listened in wonder as I talked. Finally, he shook his head, saying, "Something has happened to you. I don't understand, but you had better hang on to it. Anything is better than the way you were." The good doctor now sees many men who have such experiences. He knows that they are real. While I lay in the hospital, the thought came that there were thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad to have what had been so freely given me. Perhaps I could help some of them. They, in turn, might work with others. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. That's Bill accepting doing step 12. When he walked out, he's saying, when I get out of here, that's what I'm going to do. That's Bill taking step 12. He hasn't actually done it yet, but he's taking it, right? He's agreed to it. Faith without works was dead, he said. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again. And if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. My wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. It was fortunate, for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink, but I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Many times I have gone to my old hospital in despair. On talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It was a design for living that works in rough going. We commenced to make many fast friends, and a fellowship has grown up among us of which it is a wonderful thing to feel a part. The joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty. I have seen hundreds of families set their feet in the path that really goes somewhere, have seen the most impossible domestic situations righted, feuds and bitternesses of all sorts wiped out. I have seen men come out of asylums and resume a vital place in the lives of their families and communities. Business and professional men have regained their standing. There is scarcely any form of trouble and misery which has not been overcome among us. In one western city, Akron, Ohio, and its environments, there are 1,000 of us and our families. We meet frequently so that newcomers may find fellowship they seek. At these informal gatherings, one may often see from 50 to 200 persons. We are growing in numbers and power. Note, bottom of the page. In 2009, AA is composed of over 116,000 groups. And just a little update on that, we did get the 2014 pamphlet, and it's 115,000. So it's like less meetings, right? No, it's groups now have more meetings per group. You don't need another group. You just add a meeting to a group that's already. You know. An alcoholic in his cups is an unloving creature. Our struggles with them are variously strenuous, comic, and tragic. One poor chap committed suicide in my home. He could not or would not see our way of life. So this is the story of Bill Cousins. He lived in 182 Clinton with Bill and Lois. Bill and Lois go down to see Fitzmayo for a weekend and leave Bill back at the homestead there. And Bill is a Canadian. He's an attorney, or maybe a former attorney, and he's a pro bridge player. He's a gambler, so he's a professional bridge player, and so he needs money. Anyway, he's hawking some of their best clothing while they're gone, right? Or they discover he's been doing it a while, right? So depression, can't stop drinking, gambling's probably an issue in his stress also. But he takes the stove, kicks out the pilot light, turns on the gas, and commits suicide that way in their home. There is, however, what a great segue. There is, however, a vast amount of fun about it all. I suppose some would be shocked at our seeming worldliness and levity, but just underneath there is deadly earnestness. Faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, or we perish. Most of us feel we need look no further for utopia, meaning the perfection, heaven. We have it with us right here and now. Each day, my friend's simple talk in our kitchen multiplies itself in a widening circle of peace on earth and goodwill to men. Bill W., co-founder of AA, died January 24th, 1971. We'll stop there tonight.